Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? In 1980, the public said no and threw Jimmy Carter out of office. If you ask now, the answer is a qualified yeah, but.
If we can continue the pro-growth policies of the last 7 years, I believe that the next decade will be known as the Roaring 90s.
The Republicans call it the supply-side recovery. 65 straight months of economic growth, along with the taming of double-digit inflation. Yeah, but...
economy is expanding too rapidly, which means inflationary pressures are rising.
On Wall Street, stocks are up. Yet investors are jittery about inflation, worried that the country's economic growth has been pumped up by the budget deficit, by government borrowing.
There are more Americans at work than any time in the history of this country.
The Reagan administration has brought unemployment to its lowest level in 14 years and created 11 million new jobs. Yeah, but that's fewer than President Carter created. And family income has actually dropped for all but the top 20% of the population. Still, consumers keep buying. Unfortunately, much of what they buy is foreign made.
I'm spending just about everything I get my hands on now.
The trade deficit fell a stunning 30% in March. Yeah, but imports keep rising. And much of the new spending by industry is not going into plant expansion, but into buying foreign-made computers.
Any candidate who proposes a budget now for next year's doesn't know what budgeting is all about.
Neither Dukakis nor Bush is spelling out solutions for the budget deficit, despite concern that the country cannot afford to solve its problems: housing, education, drugs.
The new president taking office next year will probably have a slowing economy placed in his lap.
With all the good economic news, why do polls show such unease about the future? We'll ask Treasury Secretary James Baker, and we'll talk about the campaign with Howard Fineman of Newsweek and E.J. Dionne of the New York Times. The economy. Is America better off? An issue facing the nation.
From CBS News, Washington, Face the Nation, with National Affairs correspondent Leslie Stahl.
With us, James Baker, Secretary of the Treasury. Mr. Baker, there are new fears that inflation may be returning to our economy, and specifically, I say this, because apparently foreign investors are not pouring as much money into our economy as they used to, particularly the Japanese and to a less extent the Europeans. Apparently over the last few months they have not been investing in U.S. securities and bonds as much as they had been, and this is making some investors worried about inflation. Should we be concerned?
I think fears of inflation are vastly overblown, and I think we saw some evidence of that last week when we had some indicators come out that were not as positive as some people thought. I mean, there's some fears out there that the economy is in fact too good. I don't think it is. I think it is very good, but not too good. I think it's going to continue in a sustained and moderate path with low inflation. Market interest rates came down last week. I'm not sure where you got the information about in foreign investment, but the fact of the matter is that foreigners are investing to a greater extent today in our securities than they were, say, 4 to 6 months ago. We've seen added strength in the dollar. In our treasury refunding operations, we have absolutely no problem selling our securities. We are covered by 200 or 300%, so I'm not sure where that information
is. Well, actually, I got it out of U.S. News and World Report, and they say that the average over the last year was $2.8 billion of foreign investments per month, and that over the last couple of months it's only been $50 to $75 million. And if foreigners stop investing in our country, that's really going to squeeze us with our debt, isn't it?
That's not going to happen, though. It hasn't happened, and it's not going to happen. And you're really not going to see, in my view, a return of inflation. It's been running at the rate of about 4.5% on the CPI for the first 4 months of this year, versus 4.4% for all of last year. So we really don't see that as a problem. And as I say, I think market evidence of that was certainly here last week.
Well, then I assume from what you say that you agree with George Bush that it's time for the Fed to ease up a little and let interest rates fall?
Well, I agree that that the Fed, and I think this is what the Vice President said, that the Fed is doing a good job of maintaining the balance between preserving growth on the one hand and guarding against inflation on the other. And that's what they have to do.
Well, I don't think he said they were doing a good job. As it was at least reported, he was kind of bashing them for having nudged short-term interest rates up over the last couple of months.
Well, that I think if you look at the whole interview, that's not really what he said. And he said that he recognized the importance of guarding against inflation, but at the same time, it's important to make sure that we preserve growth. And to be very honest about it, I think that's exactly the policy that the Federal Reserve is following.
Would you like to see interest rates come down a little more, though, since you have no concern about inflation?
Everybody loves to see low interest rates, but at the same time, we've got to guard against inflation. And I think that the current course of monetary policy as practiced by the Federal Reserve is very satisfactory.
Well, now, what did you just say? Do you want to see them come down a little?
I think I don't predict interest rates. I never have. Took a pledge to myself when I took this job that I wouldn't, and it was a very good pledge to make, and I've kept it, so I'm not going to break it today. Everybody would like to see low interest rates, but at the same time, we must be vigilant that we don't see a return of inflation. We're not going to see it this year. It's going to be roughly right where we forecasted. Yeah. And part of that is because the Federal Reserve is pursuing an appropriate policy.
Do you get a sense that the economy is as you say, at an absolutely perfect place, but if any little thing goes wrong, I mean, we have a situation where factories are producing more, but they're not investing in plant expansion. You don't have shortages because the public isn't consuming that much, but if they begin to, we could have a squeeze demand. Write at some kind of very precarious, strange balancing point?
No, I really don't believe that. I mean, I noticed the intro to your program, the yes, but. Mm-hmm. But if I may say so, people have been out there saying yes, but since the spring of 1983, they've been telling us that yes, things are okay now, but the wheels are going to fall off, the economy's going to go in the tank, and it hasn't, and it is not going to.
How long is it not going to?
Well into the foreseeable future, well into the foreseeable future. We're in the 66th month of expansion. We've created more new jobs than all of Europe and Japan combined since the end of the last recession, over 15 million new jobs. We've got inflation down to under 4%, or it has been over the past 4 or 5 years. Interest rates are about half, less than half, as a matter of fact, of what we inherited back in 1981, and it's going to continue.
You know, I think people are confused, and that's why I did the open like that, because everything you say is absolutely true, and yet you have a feeling, and it is reflected in all our polls, that people are uneasy. If we're so well off, why can't we afford to build housing for our poor people?
Well, you have
that kind of nagging concern. Don't you think that that's out there and it's real?
I think what you've got is the fact that the economy has been doing so well for so long that people have forgotten how bad it was the last time we had people of a different political persuasion in the executive branch, if I may say so. And I think that's part of it. 66 months is a long time. But the truth of the matter is, the economy is going to continue to perform in this sustained, moderate growth path with low inflation, well into the foreseeable future.
Well, that's very rosy. What about the deficit?
Well,
is that not a big problem then? Can we just coast the way it is?
No, we need to continue to be vigilant about the deficit. Again, people have been saying since the spring of 1983 that the deficit was going to put the economy in the tank. It hasn't. We have made substantial progress on the deficit since then. The deficit is now down to about 3.4% of our gross national product, whereas in 1983 it was 6.3%. The important thing is to keep the path moving down. And we can do that. We've just had a historic agreement between the President and the Congress, 2-year budget agreement, $75 billion additional reduction. It's happening.
I ask you about the deficit because your candidate, George Bush, says we ought to cut taxes, we ought to cut the capital gains tax. And even some people in the Treasury Department say that's a good idea. Do you agree? Should we start cutting the capital gains tax?
I'll tell you, the biggest disappointment to us in tax reform, quite frankly, was that we were not able to maintain a differential for capital gains, because we think that means investment. We know it means capital formation. It means venture capital. It means more in revenues, actually, is what this study showed, that the government will actually gain
in
revenues by having a capital gains differential. So yes, I would absolutely be for that.
At the same time, let me say,
we're not going to send legislation up to the Hill now to suggest that, because that would reopen tax reform, and we don't want to reopen tax reform.
Well, how can you have it both ways? You said you want it, but you're not going to do it.
You just asked me if I was for it. Yeah. I have to give you an honest answer. Sure, but I'm speaking, not as an administration. I'm not saying that that's the administration policy, that we're going to send legislation to the Hill. But do I support it personally? I think it would be a great idea.
Michael Dukakis says that it's a tax cut for the wealthy, and he calls it the idea that it'll have more revenues, more voodoo economics, quote-unquote.
Some of that same old soak-the-rich philosophy that got tax rates up to 91% earlier in the history of this country, and 70% when this president came into office. The top margin right now is 28%. Why do you think we're in our 66th month, the successive month of expansion? Why do you think inflation is low? Why do you think interest rates are low? Because we've finally reduced the tax burden on the American people.
I know you're your Secretary of the Treasury, but that speech just then sounded a little bit like maybe a campaigner. Are you poised to go over to the Bush campaign and become his campaign manager? He says that he's talked to you about your coming over.
No, I'm not poised to go over there. For now, I think my job is at the Treasury Department. And what the future holds is a crystal ball that I don't have right now.
Newsweek magazine, and the issue that's about to come out, predicts that you'll go over to the campaign right around the convention time in mid-August. What about that?
I can only tell you that there is no agreement, no arrangement, no deal, no understanding in that regard. I have a job to do at the Treasury Department. I have a full plate. A portfolio that's still very full of things to do, and my job is to stay there and do that.
Let me ask you some political questions, if I may, because you are part of the Reagan administration as well as a close friend of George Bush, and I understand you have been advising him a little bit. Why do you think it is that the Reagan administration hasn't done more up to now to help George Bush's campaign?
Oh, I think that they have.
What have they done?
I'm not sure that I... What have they done?
Yeah.
They've given us 66 straight months of expansion.
No, I mean
they've
campaign.
Given us low interest rates, low inflation. Well, that's what they've done. The policies have helped. They've just given us an extraordinarily successful summit with the Soviet Union. That will help the campaign. So I think the suggestion that somehow the Reagan administration is not helping the vice president's effort is spurious, if I may say so.
Well, there are people in your campaign who feel that the president personally could be doing more and that he could be promoting. For instance, let me give you something that I heard.
I think you need to address that question to those people.
Well, but let me ask you about this. For instance, the trade bill. By allowing the focus to be on plant closing instead of on maybe the anti-protectionism, on what you've been talking about, how strong the economy is, that didn't help George Bush at all.
Well, you know, I think it's the view of the president and the vice president as well that the best politics, good economics is the best politics, and that's good economics. The fact of the matter is we ought to be in favor of notice for workers voluntarily, but not mandated by the heavy hand of government interfering in the collective bargaining process. This trade bill was designed to make the United States more competitive, and this provision doesn't create $1 of exports or one new job, and it doesn't open one foreign market.
Yeah, but it was. Let me ask you a final question, because I'm getting the little signal. George Bush says that under no circumstances will he raise taxes, even if the bipartisan commission recommends it. Now, given the deficit, given the fact that we talked about housing, there are other needs in our society, AIDS. The new commission has just recommended that we spend $3 billion on AIDS, drugs. Mm-hmm. Do you agree that there should be a blanket, no tax pledge at this point, no matter what?
I sure do. I think it's extraordinarily easy to raise taxes. It's a lot easier for politicians to raise taxes than it is to cut spending. The fact of the matter is we're taxing the American people at 19% of our GNP, which is historically where we've taxed them. But we are spending as a government, a federal government, at 22%. And that's why we have a deficit, because we cannot control the federal government's appetite for spending. And it's there that we've got to take on the deficit. That's the president's position, it's the vice president's position, and it happens to be the right position.
The public says that if you earmark the tax money for programs that they want, then they would accept a tax increase.
That is a very, very difficult thing to do. Because if you earmark it over here, then the Congress has this wonderful facility to say, well, now we've taken care of all that, and we'll just go over here and spend what's left on additional spending, or we'll create additional spending for the general tax dollars. That's very difficult to do. If there were some way to do that, you might explore it as a possibility, but it's very, very difficult to accomplish that.
Okay. Mr. Secretary, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
Joining us now, Howard Fineman, chief political correspondent for Newsweek magazine, and E.J. Dionne, chief national political correspondent for the New York Times. Gentlemen, let's talk about what Reagan, President Reagan, can do to be more helpful to George Bush. Does he become, E.J., more prominent? Does he come before the public, or does he recede so that Bush won't suffer by comparison?
I think what he needs to do is nothing direct, but a lot of things indirectly. That what he really needs to do is try to shape and change this debate. For the last several weeks, you've had a campaign based on a few words like Meese and Noriega, and that's hurt George Bush a lot. And as Secretary Baker was just saying, what the Bush campaign really needs is to focus on things like the summit and the economy. And I think the administration has done a terrible job at focusing people's minds on the things that Republicans want them to be focused on.
Well, Howard, the people in the Bush campaign say that the reason his poll ratings are so low, the reason that he's 10 points or more behind Dukakis, is just what E.J. said, that it's not Bush himself, but Reagan's record. And now that the summit will make the administration look good, Bush's ratings will come up.
Well, I think there may be something to that. You'd like to have a good economy if you're the incumbent party. But Reagan's successes in Moscow, for example, are based on a personal relationship with Mikhail Gorbachev. That's not really very translatable to George Bush, number one. Also, Reagan's popularity has not proved to be transferable to anyone else, to Senate candidates. I don't know how transferable it's going to be to Bush. Right now, I think he's created more problems for Bush than he has helped them. As we said, Meese and Noriega is one, and I think the plant closing veto is another. And I think if they base the campaign on pushing Ronald Reagan out there to carry George Bush over the line, it's not going to work.
Why hasn't? I tried to ask Secretary Baker, but E.J., why hasn't the White House been more focused on George Bush and more helpful to him?
Well, I think the history is not on the vice president's side, that the White House in 1960 didn't help Richard Nixon very much, and the White House in 1968 didn't help Hubert Humphrey very much, which is why we've had all this discussion, I think, of how hard it is to elect a vice president. I think the other thing that's unfortunate for the vice president is that he seems to be getting all the blame for what goes wrong in the administration, and very little of the credit, that the Times CBS polls are showing Bush running well behind the president's own popularity. And I think that part of the problem there is that because he has no direct and obvious responsibility that people can put their fingers on, he doesn't get the credit. On the other hand, he was there, so when things go wrong, the question is, Mr. Vice President, why didn't you stop it? And I think that's one of the reasons he's suffering both ways.
Mm-hmm. Howard, what about the gender gap? Why is Bush suffering so much on that score?
Well, there are, I think, a couple of explanations. One of them is that the entire Democratic primary race really has been run on a lot of issues that the polls show and that my own interviews show women are particularly concerned about, whether it's daycare or health care, economic issues that affect single mothers and so forth. That's one reason. Another that a lot of Republicans even say, not necessarily those in the Bush campaign, is that what we used to call the wimp factor, the question of Bush's character and personality, is one that people have doubts about, and for some reason or other, women right now do to a greater extent than men.
Well, let me ask E.J. the other side of that question. If Bush is doing so poorly with women, why is Dukakis doing so well with women?
Well, I think some of what's happened is that the whole pivot has changed, that in 1984, there was a gender gap, too. The gender gap was that men voted by a landslide for the Republicans and women were split more closely. So that you had a gender gap that was the Democrats' male problem. Now what you've had is a shift toward the Democrats such that the vote among men is much closer and the Democrats are winning a landslide among women. So I think that is a big well, piece, that the overall shift in the political mood has a lot to do with it.
Is it issues? Is it what they're talking about? Or is it their demeanor? Is there something in the way they look, the way they talk, that is appealing?
I think we need to say at this point that neither of these candidates is really all that well defined to the American public. Certainly not like Ronald Reagan. George Bush is known as vice president, but not really as presidential candidate.
But
Mike Dukakis is not that well known either.
You
these
say
are first impressions.
Both on issues, because they've been deliberately vague. But you're also saying as to personality, as to character, that...
Yeah, I think so. I think what we've seen of Mike Dukakis is winning a whole lot of primaries, a lot of attention focused on him. We haven't seen that much else yet. The focus hasn't been put on him yet. The heat hasn't been put on him yet. So who knows what the opinion of men and women will be after they see him under the microscope.
I think there's another piece of this, which is that the Republicans have held down the gender gap, that is to say, they've done a little better among women, by focusing on two kinds of women. You've had sort of lower middle-income women, working-class women, whom the Republicans have been able to appeal to with kind of traditional social themes. Those kinds of people, both men and women, seem to be going back to the Democrats and voting on economics, so the Republicans have suffered a loss there. Secondly, among upper-middle-class women who, if you will, are more feminist in their views, Republicans have gotten them to vote their economic interests as relatively well-off people instead of voting their gender interests. Now they seem to be drifting the other way.
Because they're better off. They don't have to worry about the economy.
Well, I think, in fact, and in the first part of the show when you were trying to address that, I think that one of the many reasons why the economy isn't helping George Bush that much is that there's the one side is that people are still uneasy about the future, so it's not giving him as much of a boost. But the other side is that insofar as people feel pretty good about the economy, they're not worrying about it anymore, so they're moving to a whole series of other problems. So instead of worrying about how well the economy is going, they're thinking about the homeless, they're thinking about drugs, they're thinking about a lot of other issues. And I think that's a curious problem of the successes that the administration has had.
Uh-huh. Let me ask Howard, I think it's going to be a final question. Dukakis is ahead, too, because he's been winning. He's been beating Jesse Jackson. How does he continue to do that? How is he going to beat Jesse Jackson on the platform questions and on delegate challenge questions?
Well, he's trying to steer a middle path, I think, between being showing that he can be tough with any constituency group or any foe, including Jesse Jackson, and being too nice and raising questions about the influence of special interest groups in the party. I think he's going to continue trying to be tough but fair with Jackson. I think they're engaged in something of a pillow fight now. I mean, you're seeing a lot of punches being thrown, but deliberately not a lot being landed. I think they've pretty much agreed on what's going to happen, which is that Jackson will have a say in platform, although not on all platform questions. He'll have a major role at the convention and also in the fall campaign. But there are going to be certain issues, maybe it'll be South Africa or some other issue where they will agree to disagree.
Is it that well choreographed, do you think? You're suggesting a
well, nothing, nothing with Jesse Jackson is ever that well choreographed, but I think there is basically an understanding here, which, unless things get out of hand, which I don't see them doing, will last through the convention.
Gentlemen, thank you very much, both of you. Howard, EJ.